Today on CityCast Pittsburgh, more Pittsburghers are thinking outside the box when it comes to funerals. House hunting looks a little different these days thanks to artificial intelligence. And could this be the year Pittsburgh actually hires enough lifeguards? It's April 5th, the Friday News Roundup. I'm Mallory Fulk, and here's what Pittsburgh's talking about. I'm with CityCast's Sophia Lowe. Hey, Sophia.
Hey, Mallory.
And CityCast contributor Meg St. Esprit. Welcome, Meg.
Hey, how are you?
Doing pretty well. Great to have you here. So last week on the show, we were coming up with our own pitches for The Pit, which is a medical drama that's going to be set in Pittsburgh. And a listener wrote in with her own pitch, which I wanted to share with you.
Okay.
Chelsea C. from Bellevue texted us and said that she would love to see a very Pittsburgh storyline where a romance between two busy doctors cannot be sustained because one lives in the North Hills and one lives in the South Hills. And the Tunnel Bridge commute is just too much.
Relatable.
Chelsea, thank you for giving me more romance storylines to play with. I actually want to extend the plot a little bit, if you don't mind. I have two ideas. One is after they break up, there's some sort of bridge disaster. So as they're going back home, one needs to like turn around and rescue the other. And then the other is that they break up, some time passes, blah, 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 but then they end up like on scene together. I don't know, maybe in this situation, they're EMTs or paramedics or something. And then they have to work together to save someone also on a bridge or a tunnel that's part of their former commute for their dates. And that triggers a lot of memories, some flashbacks, has them try again. And then now there's another on and off relationship for the show.
This is making me wonder, like, which local Pittsburgh musician could get tapped for the, like, dramatic swelling music as they see each other in the tunnel and realize and their love is rekindled.
I also love so how many of these plots are based around, like, awful commutes or infrastructure.
Feels extremely Pittsburgh. But Meg, I'm curious now, if you were in the writer's room for The Pit, what would you pitch?
First of all, are they hiring? Because I would love to do that. No, in all honesty, I took this question to my local mom group text last night because I knew we would have fun with it. And we did.
Right.
And we really thought that the incline is rife for catastrophe.
Ooh, yes. Like, that's a good one.
Maybe it derails while someone's in labor and they have to parachute in Noah Wiley. And then I thought maybe Dave DiCello gets a stunning shot of him doing it and wins the Pulitzer because I'm head of his fan club unofficially, and I would love that. We also talked about, like, parking chair related incidents.
Ooh.
There was a lot on Grays of people, like, impaled with things.
That's true.
So maybe, you know, they get in a fight over a really well shoveled out parking space, and someone comes in with a folding chair, just kind of, you know, stuck in them that their neighbor beat over their head.
This is making me want to maybe think twice before I ever confront anyone about a parking space again.
Thank you so much, Chelsea, for writing in to us and sparking more ideas for ridiculous plot lines. And if you're listening and you also want to call in, we always love to hear from our listeners. You can text us or leave a voicemail at 412-212-8893 or send us an email at pittsburgh.citycast.fm.
So moving on to slightly newsier content. Meg, we're really excited to have you on this week because you have not one, but two great stories out about some shifting local trends. First, you wrote an article for Public Source about how the role religion plays in funerals is changing.
Yeah, this one was really interesting. I worked on this for a couple months. This story looks at the shift in the death care industry in Pittsburgh and how that is changing in a city that's becoming less and less religious. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, what inspired you to look into this?
So it's kind of funny. My mom told me to watch an old HBO show called 6 Feet Under. I think it was from like 2000, 2001. So I'm watching it and it's about a family that owns a funeral home. And while I'm watching it, I got a press release email saying that Pittsburgh is becoming less religious. Our statistics are declining. So I just started thinking about how would that change funerals? How would that change palliative care? How would that change, you know, pre-need, which is planning for your death before you die? And so I poked around a little bit and found some really interesting things going on in the city.
Yeah, and I mean, your story included some stats about religious affiliation in Pittsburgh, where it stands right now. What did you find?
Yeah, so there was a study by Pew Research in 2021, and they said 3 in 10 American adults are religiously unaffiliated. For Pittsburgh, it was 2 in 10, so we're a little bit more religious than the country as a whole.
Yeah,
but
that doesn't surprise me.
Right, we have a church on every corner, beautiful ones. But it's still a big chunk. 2 out of 10 Pittsburghers that are not religious is not a small amount.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I imagine that then means that they're not, you know, turning to some of these longstanding religious traditions that other people kind of rely on when they're thinking about death and dying in the burial process.
Exactly. I think a lot of us have those childhood memories of, you know, sitting through viewings, going to funerals at big churches around the region. And that's really just changing. The death care experts I talked to said more people are opting for celebrations of life. More people are opting to have the service right at the funeral home. And some people are just skipping it altogether and saying, put me in the ground.
Mm-hmm. And something that struck me about the story is how a lot of people want things to be more personalized. They're not following, you know, necessarily the traditions their family may have had, or as you mentioned, like do a conventional funeral. Because you talked to one woman who wanted her family members to receive glass orbs with ashes inside. Like, is that a thing that's also becoming more common? Just like this idea of, I guess, doing something else with your ashes besides letting them sit somewhere.
Absolutely. Yeah. So when I heard this was Janice Perkins that passed away on the north side this December. And she did. She chose the orbs. She talked about it with her family before she passed away. And they showed me a picture of them. They're beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
So I, of
what
course,
do they look like?
They look like almost like a model of a planet or
cool.
a celestial object. Just beautiful.
Uh-huh.
And so I did Google it. And there's all sorts of other things you can mm-hmm. put your ashes in now. It really is changing. There's necklaces, and actually that was a plot on 6 Feet Under, was everyone shared someone's ashes in a bunch of necklaces, so they all had a little part. So I think we're just kind of changing how we think about what we do with our body when we don't need it anymore.
Yeah. Meg, I know like some of these death care professionals you talked to also talked about helping people kind of navigate. Sometimes there's a tension between what the family wishes for them and their own vision for what happens to them after they die.
Yeah, everyone I talked to had something to say about that, whether it was the people that work at funeral homes or at the mortuary school, at Penn Forest Natural Burial Park, and then just the people I talked to that are planning their own funerals. There is that sense of tradition. There is all of our family members are buried at X cemetery, mm-hmm. or we've always done it this way. This is the family plot. And so sometimes when you push back against that, you're stepping on toes, you're hurting feelings, you're bucking the trend. And so the death care professionals really can serve as a buffer
mm-hmm.
in that sense to help advocate for the person that is dying or has died.
You mentioned that one of the places you talk about in your story is the Penn Forest Natural Burial Park in Verona. I actually went there a little over a year ago for an episode of CityCast.
Okay.
It's the only certified green cemetery in Pennsylvania, which means that everything that goes into the ground is biodegradable. You know, they don't use things like embalming fluid or burial vaults. You can get buried in a meadow or a wooded grove. I remember at the time, Laura Fessel, who's the cemetery's manager, described it as going out without a trace.
I love that.
That seems very mysterious and like ghosty. I guess ghosts are still on.
They have a trace.
Haunting. I don't know. It just sounds mystical.
Yeah. But the thing is, like, I just kind of remember being struck by how peaceful it felt there. Like, if you didn't know, mm-hmm. you wouldn't realize you were at a burial ground. You just think you were wandering around in nature.
Yeah. And I love that. I had not heard of it before working on this story. And I just was really enamored with the idea because I love nature. I love the woods. I love camping. And actually, it's funny, while working on this story, I was on a flight with a little bit of turbulence, and I texted my husband and said, we haven't talked about this, but if the plane goes down, I just learned about this burial park in Verona, and that's where I want you to bury me. And he was like, what is going on? Are you okay? But it just, that's how much it really kind of moved me to just say, okay, you don't need to take up this, you know, structured plot of land in a cemetery with this $5,000 stone and this vault that's never going away, which if that's what someone wants, that's fine. But for me, I don't. And so I loved the idea of just saying, you're going back to nature. You're not leaving mm-hmm. a trace.
So Meg, what really struck you about this burial park that you were like, I want to be buried here now? Like, did other people tell you things that really moved you?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, definitely just looking at their website and seeing what they're all about and talking to other people that had experiences there, I was intrigued. I sat down over coffee with a Brighton Heights couple, Mike and Jessica. They're in mm-hmm. the story. And they've purchased plots there. Mike is Catholic, though he says he views the world through a more universalist lens. And Jessica says she's less religious than her husband, but she totally respects his beliefs. So more than anything, though, they're really environmentally conscious. And Jessica said to me that this felt like the ultimate chaining herself to a tree. Like, she knows there's never going to be a strip mall there. She knows it's never going to be McMansions. Mm-hmm. And so they spent their whole life being environmentally conscious, and they can do that in death too. And so to me, I was like, that makes a lot of sense. It's protected green space. It can't ever be touched.
So I'm curious, I know that, you know, you told your husband that you're interested now in maybe a Penn Forest burial. But in general, did reporting this story kind of change the way that you're thinking about your own funeral?
You know, it really did. And I do describe myself as religious. We go to ACAC on the north side. But I've also never felt very bound or constrained by traditional funeral and cemetery, like all of the rigmarole. I appreciate it and I understand why it developed and why it's important, but I've just never felt like it was, quote unquote, necessary. Mm-hmm. So I think that this story showed me that it's perfectly acceptable for me to want to do what I want and what feels right to me, regardless of what traditions there are.
Yeah.
Well, you can find Meg's story on shifting traditions around funerals and burials in Public Source, and we'll make sure to include a link in our show notes.
Hey, Pittsburgh. I want to tell you about a real Steeltown hero. Mary Cardwell Dawson was just the coolest. Not only was she the proprietess of that gorgeous Victorian mansion on Apple Street in Homewood, but inside it, she presided over the National Negro Opera Company. She founded guilds for other Black singers all over the nation, and she was a mentor for fellow opera singers from here to Washington, D.C. And lucky for you, our modern Pittsburgh opera has a show celebrating her legacy. Get your tickets now for The Passion of Mary Cardwell Dawson. It's at the Byam Theater through May 5th. And don't be nervous if you're new to opera. The show is in English. It's just over an hour and features a little dialogue for folks to follow along. Tickets start at just $15, and there are all kinds of discounts and special offers for students, teachers, seniors, and veterans. Get your tickets now in our show notes for the Pittsburgh Opera. That's at pittsburghopera.org.
So before you need a final resting place, you need an actual place to live. Meg, you also wrote about a new real estate trend for Pittsburgh Magazine.
Yeah. So before you're looking for that place you're going to park yourself forever, you're probably looking for the place you're going to park yourself for the next couple years. So I am a columnist at Pittsburgh Magazine. I write Hot Property, which comes out every Monday, and we feature a different home. So I look at Zillow a lot. I look at a lot of home photos.
That's so fun.
I was going to say same. I don't get paid for it.
Well,
sadly.
That's the funny thing. I was
living
doing it before I had the opportunity to be paid for it. So it was kind of a nice kind of a nice segue. But yeah, we go to a lot of open houses. And a lot of realtors started to talk to me about this AI trend, whether it is, you know, simply staging homes using AI, like adding furniture to empty homes, or big scale, like VR headsets, home tours, things like that. Mm. So it's really evolving, but it's really interesting.
Yeah.
Especially if you're relocating to be able to tour homes in other cities. Because, I mean, if you only have 2 days to look at houses in Pittsburgh, that's pretty tricky. But if you can sit in Paris and tour this mansion in Highland Park and decide you want to buy it without ever coming here, that's phenomenal.
The Paris to Pittsburgh pipeline.
yeah, right.
So I actually did some of like these 3D tours because when I moved here, just renting, not buying, I didn't actually tour any homes here. So that was really helpful. But I also saw in the Pittsburgh Magazine article, you were wearing this VR headset.
Yeah.
Is that something that like that's offered pretty regularly now too?
So it's not offered regularly.
Okay.
It's kind of new and exciting. Uh-huh. And Pittsburgh's kind of leading the way in this, which is fun. I went actually just right around the corner in Market Square to pee at Sotheby Realty to use, it's a MetaQuest headset, the same one my kids have at home for playing Gorilla Tag or whatever they play. And I toured this Baywood Mansion in Highland Park. It was incredible. Right now, though, this technology really is being reserved for like more high-end properties.
Okay.
But like everything, it becomes more and more accessible.
Is the idea that you need a VR headset in order to be able to do this kind of touring? Or do you just like show up at the realtors and they outfit you with one? Like how accessible is this?
So definitely you can show up at the realtors and do it. I mean, that's what they're doing right now. And the interesting thing is, you know, this mansion is here in Pittsburgh and they've done a couple other high-end properties. But chances are when you're looking at a home in that price point, it's going to be someone relocating. And so they can just send the file to a VR headset in Paris or in California or Texas or wherever the home buyer is. So if you don't have one, there are plenty of offices that will have one. But also more and more households have one now. Mm. All of my kids' friends have them. They play together on them. And it is truly the same you know, piece of technology. They just plug a different file in.
Yeah, I'm curious if there are any downsides to using this kind of equipment, though, or AI in general. I know sometimes, like, people hear AI and they're like, ah, I don't really want this technology.
Right. And I, as a writer, I have those concerns. I mean, AI is definitely disrupting the creative world. I think this is one of those instances where you're like, okay, AI could be good for this because it's not taking someone else's work. They're taking actual photos and videos of a home and then creating an AI tour. So it's pretty ethical, pretty on the up and up, I think. I don't think it'll ever replace touring a home in person. I mean, there's just nothing that's going
to
replace.
You need to check the shower pressure.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Or like, what can you hear next door or, you know, things like that. And so it won't replace that, but I definitely think it is going to elevate the experience a little bit. You know, maybe there's 50 homes you want to look at and AI tours help you narrow it down to 10. That's huge. Mm-hmm. Our time is valuable.
Yeah. You also mentioned that you can use like AI to kind of Photoshop pictures.
Yeah.
Do people ever get surprised that maybe the house doesn't look like what it looks like in the photos? Or are they just like, well, I'm going to decorate this anyway. Like, I don't really care what the furniture looks like.
I think that you can definitely be too extra with the AI staging. I've seen it on a couple listings. I think, though, I talked to Sarah Media about a home she used AI staging for in the East End. And the way she did it was really thoughtful. There's a carport that the homeowners also designed to be like a pavilion in the summer. And so it's winter right now, so you can't really visualize that. So on the listing, she placed outdoor furniture in it. And she was able to go actually pick like the style of furniture she wanted that matched the vibe of the house. And I don't know that a buyer would look at that carport and think, I could have a party there, until she showed how simple it would be to do it.
Mm-hmm. That's really smart.
Yeah.
Well, if you're browsing the real estate market, if you're thinking about buying a home soon, you should stay tuned for Monday's episode where we talk to a realtor.
Yes. And then until then, you can read Meg's article in Pittsburgh Magazine. And speaking of Pittsburgh Magazine, CityCast is nominated for Best Podcast for their annual Best of the Burg contest. So if you're enjoying the show, please go vote. We'll drop a link in the show notes where you can cast your vote, or just go to pittsburghmagazine.com. It'll be near the top of the homepage. And if you want to show us even more love, you can also support us by becoming a member of CityCast Pittsburgh. And you can find that information and sign up at membership.citycast.fm.
And in splashier news, get it? I'm sorry, I'm proud of my little joke.
I love that joke.
The city of Pittsburgh is officially recruiting lifeguards for our public pools this summer.
Yeah, and anyone who likes to take a dip in our city pools probably knows that we've been dealing with a lifeguard shortage for a few years now, basically since the start of the pandemic. And this isn't just a Pittsburgh problem, it's a national problem, but it's been a while since all 18 of our public pools have been open for the summer.
Yeah, I mean, not since 2019, so right before the pandemic. Yep.
Wow. Yeah, we're a big pool family. We usually have passes to Avalon Pool, which is sadly not opening this summer because it needs repairs.
Where are you going instead?
Well, we don't know because we don't know what's going to be
open.
Oh, no. Yeah, we do have Sandcastle passes. We love it there, but that's more of a big swing. That's not something you can do in an afternoon. And there's just been so many days the last couple years when the pool was just closed due to lifeguard issues. We had a big last hurrah last summer with my kids and their friends at Cranberry Township Water Park. And we got there and half of the pool was closed, including the water slides, because they didn't have any guards to watch the end of the slide. It was a big bummer.
Yeah, that sounds incredibly disappointing.
Yeah, the kids didn't handle it very well.
Yeah.
I wouldn't handle it very well.
Right? Yeah. I love a water slide.
I think that warrants a tantrum at any age. So, the city is gradually making progress when necessarily helping Cranberry. But it opened 8 pools in 2021, 12 pools in 2022, and then 15 pools last summer. And not all of the pool closures have been due to lifeguard shortages. You mentioned repairs. People were really mourning the loss of Bloomfield Beach last summer. But the city said it was closed because it needed some TLC, some repairs, not because of the shortage necessarily.
I was really sad it was closed because everyone was talking up about how the Bloomfield pool is the best pool, and that's the closest one to me. But since it was closed, I just didn't bother getting a pool pass at all. I really want to do it this year, though.
It's a great pool for sure.
Yeah. But, you know, if the city can't get enough lifeguards, it can't open all of its pools is the bottom line.
It's really concerning for me because pools are just like this critical third space for kids, especially teenagers. And we already lost a lot of those during the pandemic. Yeah. And so when the pools are closed, there's no place for them to hang out with some like minimal supervision, a safe place to congregate.
A place to stay cool when it's really hot in the summer.
Right, exactly. Yeah. A place where there's usually cheap food that you can access easily. And a lot of the unstaffed pools have been in communities that already don't have a lot of resources.
So if the city wanted to open all of the pools, how many lifeguards would it need? I guess, how many lifeguards is the city looking to hire this summer, ideally?
Yeah, so it sounds like they need 175 lifeguards and then about 25 other staff members to help operate the pools. So, you know, people like cashiers.
Right.
Which, a side note, I lived for a while in New Orleans and the city pools there were free. So amazing. I always feel pretty salty about having to pay here. It just feels like public pools should be a free public service.
Yeah, they're free for kids, but I agree there's a lot of cities where they're free for everyone, and it seems like a really good thing to do for residents, especially in the summer when it's so hot. Not everybody has air conditioning.
Mm-hmm, right.
That would be great if we could do that.
Yeah, so I know that the pandemic played a big role in the shortage of lifeguards, both here in Pittsburgh and nationally, but there were some other reasons too, right?
Yeah, I mean, I mentioned this in an episode about Pittsburgh pools last summer, but I found this NPR article that partly blamed the shortage on Baywatch going off the air. I don't know how believable
what?
That is.
I didn't know it was still on the air.
Yeah, I mean, well, I think they meant like in the past.
Okay.
That it's led to like a slow decline.
Oh, okay.
This is at least what the spokesperson for the American Lifeguard Association said, that like back when it was on the air, lifeguarding was seen as super glamorous.
Okay.
It was a job for like felt attractive people who could do sexy water rescues. And that like as it's gone off the air, I guess in the interim years, you know, now it's just thought of as kind of like a crappy summer job for teens.
I can see it. I mean, I watch the lifeguards at our public pool and they deal with a lot of crap, literally and figuratively. They literally have a poop vacuum.
Ooh.
And where would we be without the poop vacuum?
Right? They used to have to close the pool for the whole day. Now
yeah.
It's like an hour. So, I mean, I can see why some teens might just choose to work at Target, you know?
Yeah.
Is the city doing anything to make lifeguarding a more attractive job for the summer? Hopefully fill all those 175 spots.
Yeah, so they're slightly raising the pay. So last summer, the pay ranged from $16.48 an hour to $19.05, depending on experience. And so this year, that range will be $16.97 to $19.57 an hour. So yeah, that slight bump, I guess, is the attempt to make it more appealing. And in order to apply to be a lifeguard, you have to be a City of Pittsburgh resident, you've got to be fully vaccinated, mm-hmm. and you have to be at least 16 years old by September 3rd of this year. And then you've got to be willing to work at any pool. I think the city assigns probably just based on needs, so you can't say you're only willing to work at the pool in your own neighborhood.
Oh, that makes sense. I hadn't thought about that part. Yeah, I'd probably want to work in my neighborhood too, but I guess.
Well, and that makes it tricky for teens that maybe don't drive and want to walk to work or take a short bus ride.
Yeah, right. I imagine that's kind of limiting when you're trying to recruit.
Yeah, and I know some people think there shouldn't be a residency requirement to be a lifeguard here. I also think it's kind of silly, like, I'm on the border of the edge of Pittsburgh, like Millvale, you're not a Pittsburgh resident.
Especially if, you know, you can't be
a pool still.
And I mean, especially if, you know, you're not even getting assigned to the pool in your neighborhood, the city's already asking people to travel. Mm-hmm. So I'm not sure what like that extra commute from just outside the city, what difference that makes necessarily.
Yeah, I'm sure there was a reason they came up with that rule to begin with. I mean, they've done that with other things like city firefighters, et cetera, but they've also changed that. And so it seems like if there's a shortage, why not open up the applicant pool as much as you can?
Exactly.
Yeah. But it seems like that's not a change the city is making, mm-hmm. at least for now. But if you are a Pittsburgh resident looking for a summer job that will provide a true public service, applications are open. We'll drop a link in our show notes where you can start the application process. And I know that oftentimes lifeguards are high schoolers or college age. We were just talking about it kind of being a teen summer job. But this could also be a nice job for retirees who are looking to fill their time.
I think that's interesting because I didn't think of that before, but seasonal jobs are so hard to fill in all sectors. I know that we camp a lot. We go to state parks and a lot of retirees are like campground hosts or help with different state park programs.
That's
and so,
awesome.
Yeah, they are retired, but they're not dead yet.
Uh-huh.
So why not do something that feels like giving back? It's worthwhile and they're outside enjoying themselves. I like that idea.
Yeah. I mean, I actually heard this really cute radio story about a rec center in Colorado where most of the lifeguards were seniors, were retirees. So it was this group that kind of regularly came to swim laps. And one day, because there was a lifeguard shortage, the only lifeguard there had to go use the bathroom and they all had to get out of the pool and they were sitting on the side feeling frustrated. And then they were like, you know what? There's the shortage. Why don't we sign up? And so now there's all these retirees kind of manning the pool at this rec center.
I love that.
Yeah. So, you know, if you're retired, you need something to do this summer, you want to be around kids and in the great outdoors, consider signing up.
Yeah. A few more applicants could be the difference between all our pools opening up this summer or some of them staying shut. But I do know that the city said one pool for sure will be closed. That's the Homewood Pool because all of Homewood Park is undergoing a major renovation.
So we're going to close out the show like we always do with something each of us is looking forward to over the next week or so. Meg, what is on your mind?
Well, it's funny because I feel like it's very cliche to say the eclipse, but we are very excited about the eclipse.
I am too. It's fine. I've said it like 5 times on the show.
Okay, good. So I feel like I'm in good company. Yeah, I am a last minute person for everything, but I ordered my eclipse glasses a year ago.
Wow.
Because I remember last time in 2017, there was like a scramble and nobody could find them. Yeah. So I was like, I'm just going to click Amazon Prime, you know, and they've been in my top drawer where I keep my very important things ever since. So we're going to go up to Pima Tuning State Park. And even if it's cloudy, I think we'll get to see some cool things. You know, the temperature drop, all of that. We're pumped.
I feel like even if it's cloudy, just the like experience of traveling, being around other people who are pumped for this will still be like a really nice memory.
Oh, yeah. I love collective excitement around anything. Like I can get hyped for any type of conference or big event. And I think the eclipse is going to be just like that.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be much more fun than a conference.
Oh, yeah, for sure. For sure.
Sophia, what about you?
I just want to remind people that the deadline to register to vote for the primaries is coming up. So you can do that over the weekend. The deadline is Monday, April 8th. And it's super easy. You can do this online or in person, but we'll put a link in our show notes for the online registration.
Yeah, very important. Great reminder, Sophia. Personally, I'm excited to see the point again after the intense rains and flooding that have happened.
Is the rain going to be over? I don't check the weather. I'm scared.
I think it's moving out of the area. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
We're in the clear a little bit. I hope so, because our basement's like a splash pad right now. We're going to need a lifeguard pretty soon.
Well, this is one splash pad I hope actually closes up soon for you, Meg. Check out Meg St. Esprit's reporting for Public Source and Pittsburgh Magazine in our show notes. Meg, thank you so much again for being here.
Yeah, it was a blast, as always.
That's all for today here on CityCast Pittsburgh. Please check out our website. It's pittsburgh.citycast.fm, and it's full of all our past shows and most of the great stuff that Francesca writes for the Hey Pittsburgh newsletter. And of course, there's always more for subscribers. Our music is by Benji. Megan Harris is our host. Sophia Lowe, a.k.a. Almumen, and Elizabeth Kama produced the show this week. And our newsletter was written by Francesca DeBecco and Adrian Gonzalez. I'm the show's executive producer, Mallory Falk. We'll be back on Monday with more news from around the city. Have a great weekend and enjoy the eclipse.
I've also told people that after I die, they get one haunting from me.
Just one.
Is it like a happy just haunting one. Or a creepy haunting?
Either or.
Okay.
There's only so much of my eternal life I want to spend haunting.
Right, like one per person. Time to relax.
Exactly.
Yeah.